There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Friday. A couple hours of live local talk. I'm sure glad you're here, and lots to do on today's show. I want to say sad news as we get started with the show today on this Friday. It looks like Hank Aaron, as of this morning, passed away. So Hank Aaron passed away at age 86. The home run run king, of course, Atlanta Braves legend, and Mobilian, to have a stadium, baseball stadium named after him and have his childhood home there. That Hank Aaron, born here in Mobile in 1934 and passing away this morning of 86. At 86 years old, no more details of a cause of death here, but I know it's a big story for Mobilians here and part of our baseball heritage, which is rich and deep here in Mobile. But Hammer and Hank has passed away at the age of 86. So we'll have more information as that comes in on this, and we'll pass along to you here on Midday Mobile and on the shows over the weekend and next week. All right, lots to do on today's show. We're going to talk some Mardi Gras in hour number two about some of these, the Yardi Gras and what's what people are doing for decorations. I've seen some pictures on social media. Y'all are knocking it out of the park on decorating houses for Mardi Gras and maybe doing people doing a drive-by Mardi Gras. We'll get into that. Steve Joint from the Mobile Bass joins me in hour number two of the show to talk about that. Plus Dale Leash from Lanyap to talk about the upcoming mayoral race for Mobile, some of the annexation talk back on the platter. We'll get into that. But we start off and our leadoff batter, Dr. Scott Chavers with the Mobile County Health Department joining us. And I know lots of questions for Dr. Chavers, so I appreciate you hopping on with us.
Yeah, Sean. Thank you. And man, what a tragic loss for in many areas with Hank Aaron. Yeah. I mean, he was a boyhood hero of mine, and just not only for baseball, but in so many communities and here in Mobile. So that's very sad news.
Yeah, it is, and part of that, we've talked about it before on the show. Just the baseball pedigree that this city has that is something that's forgotten, I think, by a lot of younger folks. I'm not coming down on the younger folks, but you know that that history needs to stay alive. That's for sure. So much to talk about here, and we've been talking about this week some stories out of Baldwin County when it comes to the vaccines and allocations of the vaccine. Let's talk about Mobile County, the Mobile County Health Department. Can you give us like the running stats of how many vaccines you have on hand, I guess, first dose versus second dose, and kind of give us some numbers here to chew on?
Absolutely. So we are in a critically low shortage for first dose, which means that if we look into the distribution line, we have first doses that are on the way, and we have received a handful of doses that we will start allocating next week. But right now, the second dose, which we call the booster, is being given out to those that have already been vaccinated at the end of December.
What is that? Yeah, just what is that time frame like from when somebody gets the first dose till they're eligible for the second dose? How long do they have to wait?
Well, it depends on the vaccine that you receive. If you've received the Pfizer vaccine, and you would have typically received that from one of the hospitals here in town. Your second dose is at 21 days from the first dose. If you receive Moderna, which is the one that's easier to handle and it's the one that we use at the cruise terminal, is 28 days. Now, the difference there is the clinical trials for Pfizer was basically designed around a 21-day period, where for Moderna, they designed it around a 28-day period. It's important that you allow that time to elapse, because you need your immune system to ramp up after that prime dose. And then when your booster dose hits your system, that will ramp up the immune system even more, preparing it to respond, you know, to a real infection.
Yeah, talking about this, Dr. Chambers, the two doses, and I don't be frank with you, I don't know if they were talking about Moderna or Pfizer or not. There was somebody on yesterday and was talking about places that were saying, okay, listen, we have X number of vaccines, you know, for the initial and then the booster, but we're going to use the second. In other words, we're going to give the primary vaccination to more people and wait on more delivery to do the secondary. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
So what's the story with that? Are they the same?
Yeah. It's exactly the same vaccine.
Same amount, all that.
Amount, yes. Same stuff that's in the vial, same dosage, you know, in terms of administration. So in those scenarios, basically, it is, and I think this is important for people to understand, is that things are very different, you know, in different areas of the state and in the country. So, you know, there are areas in Alabama that are, you know, they have primary dose vaccine because they haven't been distributing it. Where here in Mobile County, as of yesterday, I think all of the hospitals were on second dose protocol only, and we were on second dose protocol. So the situation would be if, you know, they requested 500 doses and they were only able to deliver 200 of that, you know, there's no sense in trying to hold back the second dose for the future. You know, you go ahead and you put that in people's arms, and the system, the way it's set up, is once you vaccinate someone, there is a separate system that will send the second dose to us, for instance.
Okay.
I know that may have been confusing. I apologize. There's a lot of really interesting dynamics that are involved here, because you've got two distributors, two very different processes, two very different vaccines in terms of cold storage, and two different point of distributions based on the vaccines that you're handling. So it can get confusing to the general public in terms of what the heck's going on.
Yeah, and the variety of different, or it seems like, of distribution. I want to ask this. There's some great questions coming in for you, Dr. Chambers. This one from Matt, he says, there seems to be some finger-pointing between the Alabama Department of Public Health and the independent county health departments in Mobile and Jefferson County. Can Mobile or Jefferson County adopt different vaccine eligibility criteria that is different from ADPH standards? Like, can y'all change the age? Can you, you know, from 75 to 65 or something like that?
So for background, the two largest counties in Alabama, so Jefferson and Mobile, we are autonomous health departments. So we do not fall into the other counties in terms of the relationship with the Alabama Department of Public Health. That being said, we do follow many of the recommendations for vaccine distribution, because Alabama Department of Public Health is the primary distributor of COVID-19 vaccinations in the state. So we do follow their guidelines, but as an example, if we wanted to extend the eligibility requirements to meet CDC recommendations, which is down to 65 years of age, we couldn't do it because the vaccine availability is not there.
But if it was, so I mean, it's a bit of a moot point, but if it was, just for sake of discussion, y'all could do that.
We would not do that without considerable consideration in terms of what that would look like with respect to receiving, you know, primary dose, secondary dose, as well as consulting with ADPH.
And Dr. Chambers, that pipeline that brings the vaccine in, is there a separate conduit for Mobile County Health Department or Jefferson County, or is it it goes to ADPH, and then y'all get it from there.
It goes to ADPH, and then we get it there. The process is that both Pfizer and Moderna are allocated from the federal government to the states based on census. And then the further allocation comes from ADPH to the counties, and within the counties to those that will either distribute the Pfizer product or the Moderna product. So, for instance, I can go in and order 10,000 vaccines for this week, and I may receive 900 allocated from ADPH, and that's because that's what they have to give us.
Okay. And they're making that decision also based on that census data that's making the decision for the state, or?
The main thing that they're having to deal with at the state level is availability of vaccine from the feds. So what is interesting, and Dr. Scott Harris mentioned this yesterday, and I don't know if everybody caught this, but there are problems right now in manufacturing with Pfizer and Moderna based on raw materials. So this is not necessarily the vaccine itself, but vials to put it in and the little stoppers that are at the top, that we put the needle in.
You're kidding me. Really?
No, I'm not. I mean, you're talking about 300 million doses in the U.S. between Pfizer and Moderna.
So it's not the actual vaccine in some cases? It's the infrastructure of the vaccine? I mean, the whole...
It's the very basic raw materials that you often take for granted that can be problematic. And if you think back when COVID-19 hit, it shut down a lot of industries. Yeah. So the petrol industry, oil industry was shut down. Well, the effects of that were we had issues getting gloves because gloves are dependent on petroleum. Same thing with glass. And with the other parts of a vaccine vial, is they are now, having issues with those raw materials and those manufacturing aspects that are needed beyond just making the vaccine.
Can you hold on for just a second to run the news break?
Absolutely.
Okay, coming right back with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department. Lots of questions coming in here. We're going to try to get as many of them as possible asked when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, let's get right back to it. And so many questions coming in here. And again, about 9 more minutes here with Dr. Scott Chavers from Mobile County Health Department. Dr. Chavers, this question, why does it seem so difficult for the state to get accurate vaccine numbers and then to get that information published?
So they know how much is going out. The problem is they don't know how many vaccines have actually been put in arms. And it's the problem is that we're dealing with a public health infrastructure that has been underfunded for decades. The way that Alabama Department of Public Health gets information is through a system called Imprint. And many of the local county health departments don't have sufficient staff to enter that information so that it feeds back to ADPH, as well as trying to put needles in people's arms to give the vaccines. So it's a feedback loop that ADPH is struggling with, and it's basically because, for every one nurse I have to have 6 support staff to handle all the bureaucracy and paperwork around it.
You think in a pandemic like this, we could shorten the amount of paperwork? I mean, it seems like if there's a time to say, hey, we need to put some of the bureaucracy on hold, it'd be right now.
Yeah, we pull out a big shovel every day and just try to shovel through this stuff. But, a lot of it to us could be streamlined. But it's not ADPH's issue. It comes from the federal government.
A lot of people say, well, that makes sense now. question, how many vaccines, I guess, and they didn't say first or second, let's say first dose. How many first dose vaccines have y'all administered in Mobile County?
Right at 3,000, okay. Just over 3,000.
And as a percentage of, I don't even know the percentage of people over 75 in Mobile County, do y'all have that number?
I'd have to do the back of the envelope, but right now the groups that are eligible for vaccination is right at 60,000. So we are at total rough estimates, Mobile County, it's about one-sixth of those have been vaccinated in Mobile County.
Yeah, this is a question we had last week, but I think I bring it back up because new people listening. This text says, so after you take your second dose, how long is the vaccine effective? Or is it once a year after that, like the flu? Or is it every 3 months, like a report I've heard before? Or is it every 6 months? Or is it every 10 years? Can you walk through that?
Right. So the clinical trials show that 7 days after your second dose, you are about 95% protected against severe illness. We don't know the durability of the vaccination, meaning how long your immune response is going to be viable against the virus. Pfizer produced studies that show it's about at least a year, but the biology of an messenger RNA mechanism gives us a lot of hope that this may be, you know, a 10-year-plus vaccine. But until the clinical trials continue, we won't know. It will not be like flu where you have to get it once a year because the vaccine targets on the virus are conserved much better than the proteins on the flu virus.
This one from Dan and Daphne says, I'm 67 with an organ transplant. I will die if I get this disease. Why am I not a priority?
Right. So priorities are established based on the possibility of severe outcomes and the probability of infection. Right now, the issue is vaccine supply. So if the vaccine supply was there, then this gentleman would be, you know, the eligibility would be extended down to 74 years of age and under with severe underlying medical conditions. But right now, it's problematic because we don't have the vaccines to do that.
I have some bravery now that other people are asking a question I had in my mind, so I'll ask it to you now. Other people, is there any way to reuse the glass vials? Can they be recycled, reused, cleansed, to try to speed up that process for the infrastructure like you were talking about, the delivery? Or is it all plastic or what?
These are glass.
Okay.
And the they are certainly have to be glass for Pfizer because of the negative 80 Celsius. So that's it. And it's special rubber is used because some rubber will start to fracture at around negative 60 Celsius. That's an interesting question. I haven't answered that in terms of recycling the vials. That's a good one. I'll have to look into that. That would, how to implement that back to the two manufacturers would be interesting as well.
I'm picturing something probably not right, but like you put the Coke bottles in the old days, in those racks and send them back to some kind of sterilization and then did it again.
Get your 10-cent deposit back.
But in this case, anything that, I mean, that's the piece of information I didn't have, that you said that one of the slowdowns is not always the amount of vaccine, but it's the transportation of that vaccine.
Exactly. Messenger RNA vaccines are easy to make, quick to make. That's one of the advantages of this mechanism. But actually packaging them and distributing them is part of the process that, is there, in which there are obstacles.
All right. Before we wrap up, people wanting to get the vaccine, let's talk about the process of getting more information about somebody who's in one of these categories and can get it now. How do they get it, Dr. Chambers? How do they do this?
Right. So for Mobile County Health Department, we are using one dynamic, which may not work for everyone. So our current dynamic is not to do appointments. You can get information on vaccine availability, our next clinics, and your eligibility either through our phone number, which is 251-410-MCHD. That's 251-410-MCHD. Or go to our website, mchd.org, there will be a link for COVID-19 vaccines. You'll click on that. You can get all kinds of information from the website. You can check your eligibility. We'll tell you what our current status is and let you know where the next vaccine clinic will be in terms of who, what, when, and where.
All right. And do you get like an email that says, here's how many vaccines are coming to the state next week? Or is it that simple? Or
We order through a system that goes to Alabama Department of Public Health. We know 48 hours roughly before we receive the Moderna allocation that we're going to get a shipment. At that point, we know how many vaccines that they're going to ship us out of our request. And then we receive the day before all the support, like gloves and needles and that type of thing.
All right. Dr. Chambers, we will check back with you first part of next week, try to get an update on what happens in the next allocation.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, great information. Thank you. Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department, our guest right here on Midday Mobile. Hopefully you got some questions answered, and we'll keep doing this the whole way through this process, because I know I'm like you. Got older family members trying to figure that out, trying to figure out how to get them vaccinated, how to decide, you know, when it comes to my turn. I got the same concerns as y'all, and we will keep getting the answers to those questions. All right, Dale Leash with LandYap joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Dale Leash from LandYap joins us in just a second. Right now, I want y'all to say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM, and as always, talking inventory. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. And you and I were just talking about the great vehicles that you have on the lot at LCM. And you said, Sean, I got one on the lot right now that you've ridden in, and you described the truck. It's a friend of mine's truck. Y'all, I'm just going to, and then I'll let Larry do his piece. This is the best maintained truck I've ever been in my life. Okay, there, I'll give it to you now, Larry.
It is a 2018 GMC Denali crew cab, four-wheel drive, Duramax diesel, and it is like showroom new.
This buddy of mine, he takes care of trucks like nobody I've ever seen. So what a great, and that's a truck. People are looking for those diesels big time.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's extra clean. You know, it's just super nice. We can get all kind of great finance rates and terms on trucks like that. So that's just one of many that we have.
You got trucks, and I love talking trucks, but you got cars and SUVs, too.
Absolutely. We got a great selection of cars, you know, family cars, sports cars, gas misers. We got mid-size SUVs, full-size SUVs, third rows. We got a mix of all.
All right. Give people directions to come check out the vehicles.
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Call us at 375-0068. Look for us on lcmmotorcars.com and like us on Facebook.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. Yeah, that's a... I just tell y'all, if he's ready, I'll say who it is, but it's a good friend of mine. And yes, I've ridden in this truck a lot of times, and it's like, he shames me, not even saying anything. Just getting in this truck shames me about my truck. All right. Great vehicle, one of the many at LCM. Let's do this. Y'all say hello to Dale Leash. He's with LandYap, landyapmobile.com, and joins us now. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. And,
good.
You know, obviously there's a lot of national stories, if you haven't heard, that have taken a lot of the air out of the local political discussion, but we're going to put the air back in it. You've done just that, and I'm glad you're on here to talk about, the big race coming up in 2021. People are thinking midterms. What is that? Now, what's coming up for 2021? What race is that?
Well, you know me, I'm full of hot air when it comes to local politics, so so I'm happy to help you reinflate this balloon.
Good.
We've got a mayoral race here in Mobile in 2021. Lest you forget, we're not done voting quite yet.
There's more, yes. And part of that, and I was reading your work, and actually I listened to you on y'all's second episode, I think, of the new podcast for LandYap, which is called what?
It's called Lagnapod.
It's the worst name ever. Dale, y'all are a fantastic group. I love all y'all, but that, you know, that's just, obviously I was not consulted there, and it's just the worst name. But
it's better than the alternatives, I'll just say that.
I can only imagine. I can't wait for us to have a beer and talk about that. All right. So you're talking about the mayoral race, but at the same time, intertwined with that, and I think rightfully so, is a discussion of annexation. And we're back on this annexation discussion.
We are. And we've got two candidates in the race, in Councilman Fred Richardson Municipal Judge Carlos Finley, who have both, to varying degrees, told Lanyap that they're against annexation. The judge basically said he's not against it totally, but for right now he doesn't think it's a good way to go with all that needs to be done in the city. And Mr. Richardson has argued many times that the city at this point can't afford it. So we're there, and then you've got the incumbent mayor, Sandy Stimson, who hasn't announced officially yet that he's going to run. I think all indications are that he probably is. In 2021, he has not made an official announcement, though, but he has pushed annexation in the past. 2019 was the most recent one. It failed because the council couldn't get 5 votes to pass it. So here we are again with just a few months before we start really getting into election coverage. We wanted to get out ahead of some of the issues, and I think one of the biggest issues is annexation. And what we're going to do with the area of West Mobile that has a lot of retail shops, a lot of newer subdivisions, a lot of great new infrastructure, but it's kind of out there in no man's land right now.
I think it's worth here kind of hit a rewind or a remedial and talk about, number one, the history of annexation votes for Mobile, recent history, and also how it works, because when this came up before, it's the council doesn't vote to annex. It was asking to give the right of referendum, right? Am I correct?
That's right. So there's several different ways to bring annexation to bring other parts into the city, but the one we're going to focus on right now is absolutely what you said. The proposal goes to city council. The city council then votes on whether or not to allow the people out there to vote to come into the city. And in this scenario, it lost 4-3. Basically, four council members wanted to go ahead and let them vote, and 3 didn't. And in Mobile, almost everything has to be decided with 5 votes, so it failed.
Okay, yeah, because the supermajority. So that, but right. And I just want to make sure, because people didn't study it back then, it wasn't actually, it was a vote to allow people to vote.
It was a vote to allow people to vote, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, which to me, and people can say, they're going to assume the way the vote's going to go, so your vote to not let people vote is based on what you think the vote's going to come out as. I mean, if you were an opponent to it and you thought the vote wouldn't pass, then you'd probably let it happen. I mean, that's, politically,
right,
kind of where my mind would go. If you think it is going to happen and you're a proponent of it, then you would want it to happen. So, then the question is, you talked about Judge Finley, you talked about Councilman Richardson, their objections to it. Let's talk about the money. Let's get into the money, that we can't afford this. Has there been, are there any, beyond politics, is there a ledger sheet on what the income would be? I mean, real, not imagined, project, but what real income would be versus real cost?
Well, I can tell you with the math that I've done here at Lanyap, and granted, I'm a writer for a reason, Sean. but according to our numbers, at least from a property tax increase, because the city gets, if you join the city, you would there'd be added property tax, and a portion of that would go to the city.
Mm-hmm.
That would come out for about 11,000 households. That would come out to about $1.2 million a year for the city. So that's an increase. And then you've got sales taxes, which is the far and away the most important when we're talking about the city of Mobile, because that's where the majority of the funds come from for the government. The sales tax numbers right now, because they're in the police jurisdiction, they pay half sales tax. The stores out there. That's about $12.5 million, I believe. So that would go up to about $25 million a year sales tax. So you're looking at I think the mayor's office has said you're looking at about an increase, revenue over costs of about $2.2 million. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot when you're talking about $25 million or $26 million, but they've said in the past they're already spending $26 million in the police jurisdiction, and the area that we're talking about right now is a huge chunk of the police jurisdiction, at least where the costs are.
Right. So, I mean, there's already expenditure going on there.
Right. There's already expenditure going on there. And I talked to Dr. Jacqueline Bunch over at the University of South Alabama. She is a political science professor. And she used a term that I wasn't familiar with. It was called edge cities. And so the area that we're talking about in Mobile, in West Mobile, is called an edge city. It's got all of the amenities of a city, basically. It's got, you know, it's got curb and gutter. It's got shops. It's got, you know, it's got residents in neighborhoods and stuff. But they're not paying full freight. So they're pulling a resource. The city has to expend resources to protect them with police and do other things. And so they're pulling money, and they're not paying full price on the taxes. So they're actually pulling money away from the central city when they could be part of the city.
So even, but if we're looking at the real numbers, and I know there's a bunch more of the discussion of the number of grants that would come in and all those things, but that's,
sure.
But even with the real numbers, it's 2 point something million to the good for the city.
That's the best numbers I have right now.
Maybe you don't know, maybe they haven't said, but if you asked Councilman Richardson and Judge Finley how we can't afford to do that, since it looks like it's $2 million to the good.
Well, that's fair, and I don't, you know, I don't really have the answers for you on that. I will say that in Judge Finley's case, he and I had a long conversation about this very issue. And again, he's not against it. He's not against it happening ever and ever. He would be in favor of it down the road. He would like to see some of the neighborhoods that are, you know, where there's blight and stuff, and you know, some of the housing isn't where it needs to be. He would like some of that addressed before we add new residents to the city. He's not necessarily against annexation. I'm trying to remember the analogy he brought up. Oh, if you had a house and the kitchen and the bathroom are messed up and don't work, you don't add on to the house. You fix the kitchen and the bathroom. So that was his take, was that we really need to get our house in order before we expand.
It sounds like we have $2 million possibly to address that kitchen and bathroom, right?
That's fair. That's fair.
And the idea of, you're talking about neighborhoods there, how much gerrymandering can be done? Because I've looked at in the past history of annexation in Mobile, there's some annexation arms that are comical, right? Because they're going to take in sales tax revenue at a Walmart like that.
There was a push, and I mean, you remember this, Sean. Yeah. There was a push to annex parts of West Mobile, but it was a lot of the businesses that hadn't been annexed were annexed for the sales tax purposes, and they left a lot of the residents out in the county. And you had an even earlier vote where you had a subsection of the same residents we're talking about now actually get to a referendum stage and vote against it. So I mean, there's kind of an interesting history there that maybe we should visit next.
Can you hold on a second? We run the break and come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, got a news update coming, and then we're coming right back. More with Dale Leash from LandYapMobile.com. Talk more about this and the huge stack, the big round bale haystack of great stories he has right now in the new issue of LandYap and online. Be right back. News is next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile online at fmtalk1065.com. You can stream us there, tune in radio app, our podcast aplenty. They're waiting for you, fmtalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab there or subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer. If it's a platform for them, we're probably on it. Continue our conversation with Dale Leash from LandYap, LandYapMobile.com, and the worst name podcast ever, the what?
The Lagnapod.
Lagnapod. Which is, I feel like I'm back in some, you know, biology class, you know, looking at simple organisms with the Lagnapod. To picture.
Yeah, I think I dissected one of those.
That's right. Yes. This week's lab, y'all were going to dissect the Lagnapod.
That's right.
So a lot of great texts coming in here. This one from Jace says, it's a pretty unanimous opinion in my neighborhood HOA group that not being in Mobile proper is the vote. Because I was talking about, you know, what the how the vote would go down. He said, I think people are too aware of Mobile's long history of gerrymandering to include retail areas only, to the exclusion of neighborhoods, residents now wanting nothing to do with the city. Spurned us in the past, you can kick rocks in the present type of thing. So, I mean, there this idea that it's a sure thing for people to annex in maybe is not true.
I mean, that's a fair point. I don't think anybody thought that they would, that people would say no, only because the city has been trying for years now to kind of roll back on the PJ or the police jurisdiction, which would affect probably more so folks further out. But yeah, I mean, that's fair. If you can find a way to, you know, get a fire district going, or if you're part of a fire district, I don't know what the downside or upside would be for whatever your choice would be.
You mentioned earlier your discussion with the professor about is it edge communities or edge cities? What was the term?
Edge cities. Yes.
That has been, back when this annexation discussion came up last time, that was almost the stick, right? We had the carrot was this revenue thing. The stick was, hey, Mobile, if you don't do this, you could have these municipalities form. You've got Sims growing so much. You could be boxed in on the west side, and not even down the road, if you want to wait and make this decision down the road, you may not have that option.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern, and I think that concern is still there, that if we don't act fairly quickly on this, that Mobile will get boxed in, like you've seen with Birmingham, where you've got all these bedroom communities around Birmingham, and Birmingham's kind of just been blocked in. Now, they've done a good job of growing regardless, or at least it looks like they've been growing. And maybe it's just the outside cities that have been growing. But you can have the same situation here. And it's with the new administration in Sims, it seems much less likely that they would become, that this group of people we're talking about would become part of Sims. But there's a very real possibility they become their own city.
And at that point, then, it is a moot point to decide if you're going to annex that neighborhood, right, if it's gone.
Yeah, you can't. Right. It's already been incorporated at that point. Then it's your chance is over.
I want to shift gears here before we wrap up and talk about the cover shot there and the cover story in the new Lagniappe. And that is what I think you're supposed to look like when you're bowling. I don't know if I've ever made that move here, but you got a serious bowler on there. What's going on with bowling on the cover of Lagniappe?
Well, you know, I went to high school in Baldwin County, and if bowling had been an option for a sport, I might have been a letterman. to be honest with you, I'm kind of upset that this was not an option for me growing up. But I always enjoyed bowling, and yeah, this is a story about Bear Montgomery trying to make the state tournament in bowling, which is a new phrase I didn't think I'd be able to say.
So it's high school varsity bowling. So, and we're talking about Mary Jean Montgomery, but who do they compete against? I mean, is it like traveling for a football game or something? How do they do this?
Well, I think that there are seven teams in our area that have varsity bowling. So you could probably find enough teams locally to do so. I know that they, I think the state tournament or they, I know they've played some tournaments in Spanish Fort, that new bowling alley there. Mm-hmm. I say new, it's relatively new. And there's a couple in the area. I don't think anybody's got like home bowling alleys or anything, but so it's a little bit different than football, but it definitely does seem like, they are, serious about it.
I think it's cool. And just a side note of what you said, and I've often lamented on the lack of fishing teams when I was in high school. Like Fairhope has done such a great job with theirs in the high school level. I would love that. And I celebrate if there's more, you know, varsity, quote or air quote or not, programs at schools that aren't just football, basketball, baseball, you know, soccer. Right. I think it's a good thing. Because
100%.
Get somebody in, and you still get the team building, and you get all the value that comes with high school, you know, sports or sports in general. It's just something for everybody. So that is that breakdown is in the new Lagniappe. Before we wrap here, talk about getting a subscription. If somebody has made that New Year's resolution but failed to get their subscription to the website and get Lagniappe delivered that way, how do they do it?
Well, yeah. So just go to our website. When you go to our website, there's a button where you can hit subscribe, and just follow the prompts. If you have any trouble, just, you know, give us a call, and we'd be happy to help you set everything up. $1.50 a week to subscribe online and get all the you know, get all of our content now, that, you know, the podcast, the you know, and all of the everything that's in the printed edition winds up online too. So you know, just subscribe, and you know, we'll try to keep you up to date on everything.
All right, there it is. And I mean, what, at any point did y'all just say maybe the Lanyap podcast would be the name for it, or was it, was that,
really,
it was
really
Lagnia Pod?
I, you know,
I'm just asking questions here, Dale.
Yeah, I don't think we considered the Lanyap podcast. You know,
that would have been crazy. Purple. That would have been crazy talk.
I, you know, Purple Pod, I think, came out of my mouth a couple times. I mean, they were really bad, Sean. So you know, we do what we can.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Godspeed, my brother. Dale, we'll talk
to you
soon. Thank you. Coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on this Friday. Steve Joint, Mobile Mask, joins us. All those questions about how, because I've been getting them too. Like, how are we going to, what's going to actually happen with Mardi Gras? What about the Yardi Gras? What about all these things? Well, I got the guru of that, and he joins us next.